when everybody in Babylon 5, many of the aliens were in these huge masks, huge. You never saw their face. It was all prosthetic. And I remember one time, one of the masked actors came up with a ridiculous ask financially on like year three. And I just, the agent called me and I said, just go back to your client and tell him we can always find another lizard. it was just like such a crazy, anyway.
So you don't want to. I love you so much, Greg. Welcome back to another episode of Tea Time, where we spill your weekly dose of the hottest tea, and today is no exception.
That was amazing. We're going to do that from now on. We should do the whole podcast that way, where you just talk and I mouth it. Let's do it. Oh my gosh. You're really good at it.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, honey. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I've been a little nauseous.
I know. Are you pregnant?
Surprise. No. You never know. We got a freak kitty.
We know.
I don't know what's going on, but the nausea hasn't been fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. I feel bad for you when I wake up and I see your face and you're just not here on this planet.
When I'm green.
Like your little sticker. Gray.
Oh, my sticker. I have a pimple, y'all. A big boy.
Babes, what is the weirdest thing you've learned recently?
Oh my gosh, not the weirdest thing, but something interesting was I learned about viruses.
Okay.
Different kinds of viruses. Yeah, that was a recent learning.
What kind of virus?
I learned about HV1 and HV2, different herpes viruses. Mm-hmm. Just doing some light reading. I don't know. What have you learned recently?
I was watching a YouTube video this morning, and this guy was I'm going to butcher it.
Okay.
An ophthalmologist, a wordsmith man.
Yeah, cool.
And he was receiving questions from Reddits and all these things. And one of the things that I learned was that there used to be a plural of the you.
They, them.
Hilarious. You was the plural of thou. Thou was a singular human.
Oh, yeah.
And then you was the plural. But thou went away, and now you is the plural. I mean, you is the singular.
Yes.
And our plural of you is y'all.
You made that up.
I swear to God.
The plural of you is y'all?
I swear to God, that's what he said. It's y'all and...
Oh, actually, I mean, that does make sense.
You all.
Hey, y'all. Hey, how y'all. You doing?
Hi, you all. Yeah.
You know what I did learn recently?
What?
The Wunda chair.
Pilates.
I did.
Yeah, you did learn the Wunda chair.
For anyone who doesn't know what the Wunda chair is, it is this Pilates device, and it goes with the reformer. So if you know what a reformer is, you'll understand kind of what the equipment looks like. But it's a piece of Pilates equipment, and it's really cool. Mm-hmm. I love it.
You look great on it.
I feel great on it. I learned the...
Push down, pull down.
Push down, pull up.
Pull up.
Kneeling mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
Footwork.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one more. Oh, the press down?
Press down, yeah.
Yes, really articulating my spine. And
so happy.
The thing that, well, what happens is naturally you get that curve in. Your stomach just goes, because when people are like, oh, suck your belly button to your spine, that doesn't make sense. It's an improper cue. Now my body is naturally doing this. It's the hollowing.
Not improper cue.
Well, it is an improper cue.
I know.
I could go just... on and on and on about the improper cues in Pilates. I'm obsessed. But I learned the Wunda chair, and I feel it feels wonderful. Wonderful.
Wow.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. Good for you, babes.
Yeah, thanks so much. The slow roll of the eye contact that you just made with me was crazy.
I'm on a slow trajectory anyway. I've just for the past like month, I've just been kind of really chill.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've noticed for myself is that I've really been aware of when my shoulders start to tense up and I can calm down. I was watching this very interesting documentary this morning, and it was called... How Gay is Pakistan?
How gay is it?
Pretty gay.
Really?
There's some gayness there that is undercover.
If I had to give a percentage of how gay I thought Pakistan was, I would say like 10%.
One of the almost incorrect but correct, I guess, percentages that they were saying in this doc, I wouldn't like... put money on it, but they were like, transgender happens one in every 10,000 or something like that. So it's the odds are
here. Comment down below, what's the population of Pakistan?
Do you want me to look it up?
Yeah, look it up.
251.3 million.
Yeah, so 1 in 10,000 is a nice amount.
Let me divide that by 10,000.
We're just doing some math.
That would be 25,130.
So there's 25,000.
They think that if you use that ratio, there would be around 25,000 transgender humans in Pakistan that are like living openly in that way. Learning about that, knowing that, you know, it's not haram to be in a same-sex marriage or have that type of sex, it made my... Our dog does not agree.
Are you repulsed, Quinn?
That was crazy.
I wonder if
that was like the most human sneeze I've ever heard a dog.
That wasn't a sneeze. He was hawking.
Oh.
It was hawk-to-ing.
Ooh. Oh. While I was watching this doc, my shoulders kept tensing up because I knew the religious backlash mm-hmm. that my community in Pakistan would receive. Mm-hmm. And I would like slowly calm my shoulders. So I think I've really been focusing on the nervous system for this past month, which has really got me to a calmer state.
I understand the tension, especially since you want to move to Pakistan. It's going to be very stressful for
us. She's a mess, yo. She's a mess.
Can you imagine? You're like, I'm moving to Pakistan. What is haram?
Haram is the way of living. So they'll say it's not haram, where it's like not legal.
Like not kosher.
Correct in a way.
Got it.
Please comment down below if I'm entirely incorrect. This is all that I got from the documentary that I watched this morning, so I'm not well-versed in it.
Everything incorrectly, and that's okay, because there's always an opportunity to learn correctly.
This is true. Can you double-check that?
Haram is an Arabic term that means forbidden and is used in Islamic law to describe anything prohibited by religious texts. It refers to actions, foods, and practices considered sinful, such as eating pork, drinking alcohol, gambling, and theft.
Right, okay. So haram means illegal within their religious background. That's a better way of placing
not
it.
Haram. So then it would, I guess, be the opposite of saying
kosher.
Kosher.
Yeah.
Because when you're saying it's kosher, it's making sure it's all good. But kosher also does, if you keep kosher, you're mm-hmm. not eating pork, you're doing certain things to yeah. ensure that you're aligning with staying kosher. Do you think you could be kosher?
No, I don't think I can be kosher.
We do have two kitchens.
This is true. We do have a kosher kitchen. But the way our periods are, I don't think kosher. I don't think we are kosher, personally. No, we're not. We're a mess. But I had another conversation today kind of about the takeover in jobs for AI.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, if AI... Mm-hmm. took over the majority of jobs.
Okay.
What would you do for a job then in order to still survive in society? What do you think the human is going to be left with?
Prompting.
But how am I going to buy? So if we all become prompters, hopefully that's enough money to sustain food and shelter?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I don't want an AI bot doing my hair or... doing my facials. I want someone who can understand nuance and really has the ability to like be an artist, yes. I guess, and craft something. So I think that anything in that world, I don't want an AI. Well, maybe I want an AI doing my surgery for precision. I don't know.
But our jobs would technically, this could be an AI job if we don't keep up
with the Joneses. An AI podcaster?
It could be an AI podcaster. Like the stuff that we do, we'd have to go in a different... you and I would have to start looking into different jobs.
For sure, the entertainment industry is shifting. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. And the fact that there's AI music artists now and AI actors and yeah, it's definitely the world is changing. I don't know. I'm trying to think of one job that is such like job security.
But what would you do, babes? That's what I'm saying.
Oh, what would I do?
Yeah,
personally?
What would you do once your job is taken over by AI and we no longer can have a podcast?
I feel like podcasting is going to stay, though, because it's pretty I mean, you'd have to, like, craft a whole I don't know.
You'd have to prompt. Tell me what job you would have.
Well, you tell me first, because you've already thought of one. I have to think.
I would probably be a chef. I would be a cook of some kind. I would even be a personal chef for people.
Okay. I mean, I could definitely do that. That's a good one. But also, a robot could cook for you, I guess.
You know, ain't nothing like that soul food.
Yeah, but if you are hiring a robot because you want just your meal exactly the way you want, and you're not so taste like an actor wanting that meal because they have to be fit for something. I guess there's no actors anymore. Never mind. A nutritionally conscious person who just wants their food prepared, an AI robot could be great for
but
that.
But I'm, again, sorry, you're changing what I'm asking. Work-wise, business suit-wise, those jobs are gone. We have to go into service of some kind. That's what I'm saying.
I'd be cooking, a therapist.
Thank you. You'd be a therapist?
Yeah.
I like that. I can see that for you.
Yeah, I would do something that would be in that world. Maybe go back to doula work. Maybe, yeah.
Because like I feel like we're going to have to go back into service jobs, things that, you know, AI can't do without a body. Mm. And all of the digital and paperwork stuff will be taken over by AI. And we're really just going to have to service each other with different things.
Yeah.
Do you not think therapy is going to be taken over by AI? People already use ChatGPT for therapy.
No, and I think that's awful. Personally, I think that it's a really terrible thing that people are using ChatGPT or AI for therapy.
Why do you think it's terrible?
I think it's terrible because therapy is supposed to be a space where you are mirroring yourself against another human and you're working through your traumas, your stuff. If you're mirroring yourself against a robot or a computer screen or whatever it is, you are not actually getting the one-on-one connection that is needed to understand how to process yourself then in the world. I understand that the world is changing, but we're not at a place yet where our daily interactions or our relationships are based with computer or robot. So the thing for me is, if you really are trying to embody your humanity, your humanness, and your human experience in, and which is what we are doing when we're in therapy, we're working through our human issues, you can't do it with a robot.
I'm going to sit on the other side of that fence and say, I think that therapy with a robot is actually, could be easier because...
I'm not looking for easy though.
No, hold on. Be easier, whatever, everything you said I don't agree with.
Let me tell you why.
About the therapy with an AI bot. Let me tell you why. Because the AI bot, if you stuck with it for a while, you're technically inputting all of your human experiences into its algorithm. And it's taking countless education from therapy to integrate it in there. Because there, I know my therapy journey has been, let me find the right person. I don't like the way this person dresses. This person doesn't understand me. You've come to a point where it's like, ugh, I'm smarter than this person. But if there is an AI bot that you input all of your childhood stuff, you just input everything, isn't that the ultimate mirror? And there is no life behind that. It is a pure mirror, no personal judgment.
Yeah, but then you're just in your own loop because you're just talking to yourself over and over, essentially. And a lot of times people go and seek therapy because they're in their own cyclical pattern. They don't see things about themselves. So if you're just downloading yourself into something that is going to, the part where I do agree with you, although you can't agree with any part of what I said, the part I do agree with you is that the incredible amount of resource, how quickly something can be presented to you, but I think,
knock you off of your loop.
I think if you're going to do AI therapy, you already have to be someone who's been in therapy for a long time.
I'd agree.
Who has a high level of emotional intelligence, who is able to also have really good self-awareness within themselves that is already identifying their patterns, behaviors, and maybe you're going in with something really specific or targeted. Mm-hmm. But I think that for the majority of people, again, when you're trying to work through your human experiences, I think you need a human, because everything that you just said about what you didn't like, I didn't like what my therapist wore, this person didn't work for me, even what I've said, where I'm like, I feel like I'm outsmarting this person and I'm wasting my money. All of that is actually super important. information to then challenge yourself. Your irritation that you experience in somebody wearing an outfit, that's an opportunity in therapy to work through that. Why does this trigger me? Why does this upset me?
I can't do that to my therapist. Why are you wearing the same damn thing each time? I can't say that to them.
Yes, you can. And sometimes they do that intentionally because they want to appear a certain way or they want to trigger a certain something in you. Good therapists should be able to receive any kind of criticism because they know that that's something to do with that client.
Yes, and there are people who have a hard time talking to other people because of the prior misunderstanding of what a therapist is. And if they are talking to something that's, I don't know, a teapot, and that teapot is, you know, conversing back with them, they might be more open for allowing those thoughts and feelings to come out easier. Because I know I've been in a therapist's office and I'm like, I'm not going to say that to this person. They might judge me. They might do this. But if I know that this is my hard drive. Yeah, but if I know that this is, I think that's a version of work that we have to do because we've never had this. But if I was able to sit in front of something that I knew I could take afterwards and no one's ever going to see it, and it's all of my thoughts and feelings, it's my diary, and it's them, well, the AI, saying, hey, you said this and this and this to me. You're still going through this pattern with this person. Let me tell you the information of why you are that way. They could diagnose so much faster. I would feel more comfortable telling more secrets that way.
But again, I think that everything you just said is why I would say you should not be in AI therapy. Because knowing that, telling secrets and feeling like you can't trust, the process of then working with a human being would be to build trust with someone where you understand that not all humans are going to take something that you say and share it, that there are people who will keep your secrets, will respect your boundaries.
And that, but what you, if that's my ultimate trigger?
That's why you work. That's why you choose to work it at it with a human.
I need to speak to a teapot.
Because the thing that you're doing in speaking to a teapot is you're still maintaining control and you're still maintaining the loop of your issue, which is I have trust issues. And if I'm going to open up, it's very difficult for me. I have communication issues. Okay, sitting down with a therapist and you're triggered and you're hard, but you're learning how to do those things and you figure out what a safe space is then...
I can see that. I can see that. And I can also see how someone like me sees that and still keeps their mouth shut. Because they never really do. Not a lot of people do the work. Because they're scared.
And a lot of people, exactly, which is why I don't like AI therapy. Because it feels like a way of not fully doing the work, in my opinion. Yeah. And it's to each their own and whatever. And some humans suck and some therapists are really shitty. I had a therapist once tell me to stick with her and I'd be cool. Like, whoa, that's a crazy fucked up thing to say.
Immediately go to the teapot.
Okay, literally.
So we're talking about AI because it's brand new in this world.
Yeah.
Do you think that you're going to laugh at yourself in 20 years because you will have then created an AI therapist for yourself and really like it later?
It's a very good possibility. I can't say that that will not happen. I could be 58 years old talking to my AI therapist being like, I love you so much. And 30 years ago, I literally thought that I would never, whatever, I did the math wrong. I thought I would never want an AI therapist and you're my best friend. Sure.
So, okay, like in 20 years, what do you think you're going to laugh at looking back?
Before you do that, do you guys want to hear, I looked up, is AI therapy bad? And it gave me an AI overview.
Well, AI is going to say this is great.
And it said, it is dangerous and potentially harmful to use generative AI as a substitute for human therapy. This is AI telling me this.
Thank you, AI.
Experts warn that unregulated AI mental health apps lack human empathy and ethical safeguards, posing significant risks, especially for vulnerable individuals. And several states are already enacting laws to restrict or regulate the use of AI in therapy.
AI, I'm glad that you can call yourself on your own bullshit. That is correct.
But isn't that the ultimate mirror?
That's crazy.
The AI knows that it's not good.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
See, I really agree with that because if you are a particularly vulnerable person or a susceptible person, and let's say you're asking, I mean, it kind of reminds me of those eating disorder websites where people would Google like how to be skinny or how to be anorexic. Mm-hmm. And there were just like ways that told people, and they were so dangerous. So if your mind, that's the thing too. If you're not of sound mind and you know that you're seeking therapy because of that, you don't want to be the prompter of the conversation. You don't want to be in control of the conversation, quite frankly. You want to be able to be like, I'm dealing with these thoughts and feelings, and have a human being who is neutral and who is trained and educated in how to handle such things to then, with empathy and compassion and understanding. So Teapot,
I'm still going to use you as a bucket for all the things that I'm scared to tell my therapist.
You know how I can use the teapot right now?
No. I have a question. What do you think you would laugh about in 20 years, looking back, of the things that we created? I'll tell you mine. I think it's going to be silicone and weird injections in the body to manipulate what we look like in an unhealthy manner.
Oh, I don't.
I think we're going to look back and look at the shapes of the bodies that we have created for aesthetic purposes and be like, what in the actual? Kind of like how I look back and look at how corset tightening and like the manipulation of the body, I guess. It's just, it's crazy to me.
Corset tightening and those manipulations.
Some of it's pretty. But
yeah. People didn't look back at them. Foot binding and all of those things.
Oh, horrible.
People just built on top of it, which is what I think will continue to happen. There has been a little bit of a shift in the cosmetic aesthetic world where filler face has gone too far. And there are, obviously, we've seen those people with their like addictions to plastic surgery and the cat women and blah, blah, blah. But I think it will continue to grow and grow and grow. I do not think there are going to be newer, more innovative ways of making people look younger. The trend of the neck lift and the getting it now, the Anne Hathaway, the Lindsay Lohan, the Jennifer Lawrence.
Wait, did all these women get neck lifts?
Facelifts, yeah. They've all got...
Wait, there's a difference between a neck and a face.
No, they're doing the neck and the face. And it's not the face that you would think. It's called like a mid-face. It's a mid-plane facelift or something like that where they lift the neck and here, and it's what people are getting in their 30s, and it is making everyone look
I'm not mad about that. I'm talking about the injections that, you know, black market.
Well, that's what people, they're pulling away from injections and doing these bigger surgeries instead. And so, yeah, I guess you're right, but I don't think that people are ever going to shy away from injections either.
No, I just think it's going to be what we put in our system people are going to laugh at. What do you want to, what's something that you would choose?
I have no idea. I really don't. That's fair. I really don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
That's fair.
I do know what? That I want you to go into the teapot now.
Into the teapot time!
Woohoo! Your therapist. Dig on in her. Today on Tea Time.
Ooh. This is the longest one that we've ever had. Crazy celebrity contracts!
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
Do you have a crazy celebrity contract as a celebrity who's had contracts?
Never in my contract and never in my rider. I was always one to just want to get the deal done and not take up too much time.
Yeah.
I've had unprecedented contracts before, which are great to say at the top of a contract. Unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never asked for anything that I feel I needed in order to sustain my celebrity or move my celebrity forward. And I feel like sometimes when people put stuff in contracts, it's to show that they're a celebrity and look what I can get.
Mm.
And if I get this, that means I'm at a different stage in life and look what I can push for. I'm a very non-confrontational person. If you don't want to give it to me, I'll ask like 2 times. And if that's it, then, you know, I'm either moving on or just saying, okay, whatever. And I'll get it at another time. You know, when I was on the road a lot, after they got my rider wrong, if they ever did, I really tried to find community for myself. Yes, I wasn't out. Yes, I was a sapphic, but I wasn't like a queer woman at that time.
Mm-hmm.
If there was an app like her at that time, I would have been thriving.
Yeah.
Because of what this app provides for the community now.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this app. How do you feel about it?
I think it's fantastic. I like that it's more than just dating, that there's meetup in real life, that there's community building. And I think that because it's made by sapphics for sapphics, the vibes are right.
The vibes are so
It's just,
right.
It's understood. And I think that you would have been, I don't know, 5 stars, highest user. You would have heard it out.
I would have heard all of it out.
In every zip code. In every area code.
And that's what it's for, right? Like,
yeah.
It's a lot of the times people in our position, women who date women, who are married to women, or women who just want to make friends with other women, not in a sexual fashion, sometimes we find ourselves in the house a lot, mm-hmm. complaining that there's not a lot of things to go do. But when you have an app like her, you're able to take the leap to meet someone mm-hmm. and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for. Yeah. Just want to be friends today. I love that.
I love it too. And I feel like it's such a good restart too, because 'tis the season, you know? People are starting over, starting new. And I think that it's good to see what's out there. Explore and see. And if this aligns with you, consider downloading the Her app today.
Being someone who's been in the industry as long as you have, especially in the different areas that you've been in, which are different than mine, what contracts have you come across?
I don't know that I've really come across crazy contracts, to be honest. Personally, I've heard stories. I've heard irritations from, you know who would be the best person to ask about this? You know.
Oh, your dad.
For sure.
For sure. We should call him up again.
Okay, let's do it.
Oh, my God. Oh, Greg, you're going to get a special section on the podcast. Let's do it.
Because you know he's got them.
Hello.
Hey, Dad, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Okay, I'm with Raven now, and I...
Don't you want to tell him where we are?
No, it's okay. I... Could you talk to me about crazy celebrity contracts and things of that nature?
Yes.
And the ones that you've experienced that have irritated you?
Yes. So the ones that I didn't, that used to annoy me contractually, primarily came from actors, and because we all know actors are children, so, you know, that's where they primarily come from. But, you know, there would be people who suggested that, you know, they had to have their own cook, and that their cook was either somebody that they were going to hire, or somebody, if they didn't have one, that they wanted us to hire, that they would interview, and that that cook slash chef would have to be available 24 hours a day to cook for them whenever they deemed it necessary to have something to eat. And that was going to be a contractual obligation. They weren't able to, you know, eat any of the food that was provided to everybody else on set.
Mm.
Other ones would be that they would have to have their own driver, and that when their driver was not being used by them, if they were working on set or doing a scene, or prepping for a scene or inherit make it, that driver had to sit idle. That driver was not allowed to drive any other individual on the show and had to just sit around and wait to see if that particular actor needed to go somewhere, even though they were shooting all day.
Mm.
The other one was hair and makeup. They always, some people would indicate contractually that if they had their own hair and makeup person, we had to hire that person. And if they didn't have their own person, we had to hire somebody for them that they would interview and approve, and that hair and makeup person, either way, could only work on that particular actor. They, in downtime or if they were doing a scene, that actor was not, or that hair and makeup person was not allowed to work on anybody else in the show. They had to be only at the kind of the use of that particular actor.
Mm.
Then there were people who had children, and, you know, we obviously had nothing to do, meaning the production had nothing to do with them having children, but they expected us to fly the children to the set on numerous occasions with the nanny.
And, oh my God.
So we had to fly them, pay for the flight, no matter how many children there might be, you know, pick them up, put them up, feed them, et cetera, et cetera. Because that was a contractual obligation since we were taking them on location away from their children.
Have you ever come across an actor contract where it was obligated that they had a certain amount of lines in a script or a certain amount of scenes in a script?
I have never seen one where there was actually, I mean, we've all heard stories about people who chose to count their lines.
Mm-hmm.
What we would get, and this was fairly standard actually, as an ask, was people would want script approval. Not only over their own role, I mentioned this to Miranda earlier, but they would ask for it over everybody else's role. In other words, they wanted 100% script approval over everything. And where this goes crazy is, well, it's crazy to begin with, but and we would never grant it. But the problems that could arise when you give script approval to someone like that, you could be in pre-production. As I said earlier, the director and all the production people are getting everything ready. And, you know, scripts go through changes at that time, sometimes financially, sometimes because of combining locations. And there's always tweaks and things happening. And you're moving towards trying to finalize that budget so that you can move toward, you know, that one day rehearsal and then principal photography. If I had to go chasing down an actor to give them every single, because contractually I had given them script approval, mm-hmm. before we could make any of those changes, they would have to read it, they would have to approve it. I mean, that would just be a mechanical nightmare.
Yeah, but because actors are children and they can never be found.
Well, I would never give script, I never gave script approval to a performer on anything. That was like a non-starter.
And why do you think actors request things like that?
Well, you know, I think you can see it both ways. However, you got to take into consideration where the ask is coming from. You know, actors, they walk into a project, they start to really get into the inside of the project, and they start to realize that it's not going to be something that they really want to participate in, but maybe the paycheck is so great or whatever. So they want to try to control it because in their brain, what they think they're doing is kind of protecting the artistic merit of the script. That's kind of from their POV. Many of them that I dealt with, a lot of them were forming their own production companies. They were getting their feet wet as producers. They wanted to become more involved on that level because traditionally script approval and script changes happen with the director, the executive producer, and the studio who's paying for it. And, you know, those people have to sign off on these things. And actors who are forming their own production companies were wanting to get their feet into that. It was very common for people to ask for approval over their own language. But generally, we would never give that contractually, but we would say, why don't you work that out with the EP and why don't you work that out with the director? Let, you know, forge that relationship and you guys go back and forth and then with the writer, you know, work it out. But we're not going to give that contractually because of all those other, first of all, it's a precedent that would be held over your head by everybody.
Yep.
And secondly, because of the mechanics of it are sometimes just impossible because you make changes for different reasons. Not just artistic. Some of it is financial. Like I said, it's financial. It's locations.
I kind of asked that question because a little while ago I was listening to something and I do not remember who it was from, but they were kind of breaking down somebody's...
They were breaking down somebody's contract and they said, you know, if you really look at what this person gets paid, they get paid $10,000 per line or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if in the history of Hollywood in some way, you know... If that...
Yeah, I mean, I think if you wanted to kind of figure out someone's compensation, that would be one way to do it. I don't think that's really a valid way to do it, but you know, because you and I both know, or we all know, compensation for actors really is based upon comps, and then based upon whatever their last project was, and then based upon giving that a bump, and then based upon the notoriety of the person that you're casting and how important they are for marketing and et cetera, et cetera.
Correct.
And that kind of drives the cost of it. It usually has very little to do with the amount of time that person is actually, mm-hmm. you know,
on
scripted,
yeah.
I mean, if you think of like Nicholson in A Few Good Men, you know, he was there for like 4 or 5 days and, you know, he had 2 or 3 scenes in the entire movie. And then obviously the big courtroom thing and he got paid more than anybody else in the piece, including Cruise.
That makes sense. My last question, I'll give you back to your daughter, is like, let's say there was a movie that costs like $8 million to make. It hits box office and it only makes $800,000. That person who's now in the lead of that movie, does their quote go down?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
No, I mean, it depends on the... I shouldn't say... Traditionally, no. Mm. I mean, in my experience, that would depend on what an agent... Those are usually arguments, or not arguments, conversations you would have with agents, where the agent would say, there are 10,000 reasons why this picture did not work. You know, the director, you know, the marketing was that, because everybody in Hollywood always points, right? Every time a film fails or doesn't do what it's anticipated to do in the box office, you know, every performer says it's the director's fault. The director blames the studio. The studio creative head blames the head of marketing, and everybody's pointing fingers at each other.
And we all blame Jennifer Lopez.
So normally what would happen is that quote for that actor, if they were in a film that underperformed, would probably still continue to go up if they had had a track record that put them into that category of being paid for notoriety.
That's the conversation of falling upwards.
Anyway, yeah.
I mean, if you have fall two up. Or three, if you have two or three bombs in a row, you know, you may have to rethink.
Then you get into music. Then you get into music. Then you get into music. You just make an album. You make an album. I just want to know if Queen Latifah came to you, Dad, and she was like, I want a no death clause in my contract because I was killed off a bunch in my earlier roles, and I want to make sure that you don't kill me off from here on out, if you would say yes or no.
That's really a question for the creative team. The reason I would not say yes to that is, first of all, I'd be usurping the power of the creative team, who needs the flexibility to be able to tell stories the way that they want to tell stories.
You're not wrong, Greg.
I was always very pro writer. They're the ones who sit there with nothing. They sit there with just their brain. They don't even have, they don't have a team, maybe a writing partner, but you know, and they create this thing.
Yeah.
And it's this thing that spurs everything else forward. And without that, you have nothing. So it's, you know, I was always protective of the writer and appreciative of the writer, but you have to give those people, especially if it's a series, the freedom to, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen in year two or year three. The show could go south. You may have to retool it. You know, some of the actors, I mean, unfortunately, they may not be clicking with the audience. You may have to replace, but you see that all the time.
Yeah,
so the like
key
in The Witcher.
To making deals
so sad.
Is never to do anything too draconian that puts you into a box of having to do things contractually just to get somebody to do it. And if somebody would throw that to me, the first thing I would say, it goes back to, like, I love this little comment I used to do on Babylon 5. When everybody in Babylon 5, many of the aliens were in these huge masks, huge. You never saw their face. It was all prosthetic. And I remember one time one of the masked actors came up with a ridiculous ask financially on, like, year three. And I just, the agent called me and I said, just go back to your client and tell him we can always find another wizard. it was just like such a crazy, anyway. So you know what?
I love you so much, Greg.
Oh, thank you, Dad. This is very helpful. And this is perfect. I'll...
I'm really glad that I never had to put my contracts in front of you, father-in-law.
Well, it was always done with a sense of humor and a little, I mean, I would get frustrated sometimes if the asks were so ridiculous. But the other key to this is when in those negotiations, you always have to be prepared to say no. You always have to be prepared to walk away.
Yeah.
And that can be prepared to walk away from the entire project.
Yeah.
Even no matter how much you may need it or want it, if the deal doesn't make sense and or you're boxing yourself into a really bad position that's going to cost you a fortune to get out of, you just don't do it. Yeah, you got to go.
Okay, Dad. Thank you. I'll call you later, okay?
Okay, Dad. Bye-bye.
Bye, friend. And I just don't have time for that.
Is my childhood in a nutshell for anyone who wants to understand.
Oh, my God. I love that man so much. Oh, my God. That was crazy. But he's not wrong.
No.
But he did come from a time where celebrity, like, it was beautiful celebrity, but now I feel like celebrities manipulate things even more now because of the likes and the followings and all of things.
Okay, so another crazy one. Keith Urban and Nicole Kidman included a cocaine clause in their prenuptial agreement that would see Keith Urban earn $600,000 for every year they were married if he remained sober by not doing cocaine.
How much did he win? Do that calculation in the comments.
Okay, so they were married for like 20 something years.
Let's just say 21.
Okay.
They were married for 21 years, and every single year he got $600,000 if he didn't do cocaine. Does he have to get drug tested every year?
I don't know. And how? What was the math? Let me do 20 times 6.
Okay.
26 times 2 is 12, so he got $1.2 million.
Wow, babe, you did that in your head? And it's not right. What is it?
$600,000.
Times
20. 20.
Well, they were married 19 years.
Oh, mm-hmm. Great. So 19 years.
I'm out here trying.
They got, this man got $11.4 million for not doing coke.
So is that on top of whatever?
Everything else.
Like,
everything else, that whatever else is in that contract that he gets. $11 million on top of it.
And that's, it's like no sweat off her back.
But how much cocaine are you going to do now, bro? With all that money?
Hopefully, right? I mean, oh my God.
I hope he like does not overdose. That's a lot of cocaine money.
Also, to be fair, he has money. Like, he doesn't need...
He needed $600,000 a year to not do cocaine.
That's crazy. What does that even look like?
Did he just...
I'm going to pay you $600,000 if you stay sober during our time together, because I don't believe you... Like, and why $600,000? Why do you...
And he could have... If he just waited one more year, he could have had an extra million.
He could have had that nice even 12.
That's crazy.
AMC must be paying her so well.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Can you say that these are all alleged?
Yeah.
These are all alleged. We don't know.
She doesn't have time. Okay, Laura, she doesn't have time.
These are all allegedly. Ice-T and Coco have an agreement that if they divorce, Ice-T gets to keep Coco's breast and butt implants.
That has to be alleged. Or maybe he paid for them and he wants it back.
And then that would mean that she'd have to have them removed and given to him.
Yeah. And he probably puts it in an AI robot.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. I love me some Ice-T and Coco, though. That's my childhood.
Jessica Simpson and Tony Romo reportedly signed a prenup that barred her from weighing over 135 pounds and required her to pay him $500,000 for every pound she gained. Thankfully, they ended things in 2009 without getting married. Do you believe that?
That sounds a little bit deeper than just the partner. I'm not going to touch on that family too much, but... That sounds weird. I don't like that clause.
That's so an alleged clause. I have to pay you $500,000 if I gain a pound. That's weird.
That's really sad.
And clearly that wouldn't have worked for her, because look at what happened when she got pregnant. Like, that's not even.
Hopefully the pregnancy isn't a part of it.
Who knows? Okay. Some riders.
Oh my God, riders. Those are the
epic.
Tell
us what a rider is for those of us who don't know.
A rider is a piece of paper that are requests from stadiums and concert venues and production people in concerts that you give to them and say, this is what I want in my dressing room. This is what I'm going to need in order to perform. And also, you can have a rider for a movie. In your trailer, these are the things that have to happen all the time. You know, one of the folklore of Hollywood is I can only have, you know, red starburst in my trailer at all times. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I must have this specific water at all times. And if it's anything else, then you can throw a hissy fit, and it's all contractual.
That's like me. When we did our live show, mm-hmm. and they kept asking, what's on your rider? And I was like, no, nothing. Like, we're really easy. They were like, well, water, anything, fruit? And I was like, sure. And then very specific with my water. It has to be this water. But other than that, I don't want anything.
My rider back in the day when I was on tour was Fiji. Mm-hmm. I needed Fiji water. And I actually set my rider up for my brother and my dancers, because I never needed anything.
Yeah.
And I made sure that they were taken care of. So it was the right kind of snacks. I had a vegan on tour with me. My brother was a young boy, so, you know, candy and things of that nature. But it was never anything for me.
That's what I ended up doing, too, for our live show, because we had T.S. Madison coming. We had Bob the Drag Queen coming. I knew Laura was going to be there. I knew we had some other people with us, and I wanted to make sure that they had, like, because Bob loves his Red Bull, mm-hmm. and wanted to make sure that T.S. had, you know, the water that she likes and fruit and snacks. And so, yeah.
And sometimes my problem with a writer is that they overbuy.
Yeah.
And I leave a lot of stuff. I used to do a lot of publicity back in the day. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite places to go to was the Facebook or MTV building, because their dressing room was always stocked. Always stocked. And I would just be like, hair and makeup, open your bags. We're taking all this shit.
You know where we were recently, where the snacks were great?
Amazon. Yep. Amazon, and I took some shit home.
And I went to visit my friend once who worked at Google, and it wasn't just like a rider situation, obviously, but their cafeteria, they had like they would have weekly chefs come in, like very well-known chefs who would cook meals for all the employees. They had gorgeous coffee bars. They had bagels.
It's just a gorging of food at these really high-end places. It's just a massive amount of stuff.
But those employees loved it because they never had to make any food. They didn't have to spend money on lunches or breakfasts, and they were high quality.
We bought it for them and all of our Googleness.
For sure.
We bought it for you. What else is on
this?
Let's
hear about some celebrity writers. Weird Al Yankovic used to request one garish Hawaiian shirt at every appearance. Eventually, he stopped when he collected too many.
That's fair.
That's kind of funny.
I like that. And that makes sense for him.
Yeah, it does. Beyonce has in her writer that her dressing room should be set to 78 degrees at all time.
I mean, look at that body.
It needs to be hot.
Well, she's already hot, so, you know, she got to keep the warmth. And her singing voice and the body has to stay warm. I would do something like that, too.
78 degrees is hot.
There was a rumor a long time ago that J-Lo and her writer used to ask for a new toilet seat in every venue.
I don't blame her. I would ask for something like that.
Look in the card. It's the last one.
Jennifer Lopez's tour writer includes a request for an all-white dressing room to create a serene environment, I have heard this, and demands for all-white drapes, tables, couches, flowers, and candles.
Oh, and a new toilet seat.
And allegedly a toilet seat.
No, but like that was like one of the biggest things that I've ever heard. I'm like, I'm not mad at you, J-Lo. She does not want syphilis. At one stage, not one moment.
I never heard the toilet seat thing. What I just read, I've heard about her always wanting all white and blah, blah, blah. But the toilet seat thing, I actually get behind.
Hell yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of work, but.
Not really. I've changed a toilet seat. All you got to do is go to Home Depot, $30, and it's just a screw on, screw off. And it's actually really smart because these venues are just used and used.
Yeah, they're disgusting.
Used.
Yeah. And same with wagons. Like,
oh my God, the paddy wagons.
Yeah,
trailers are gross.
Post 2014 breakup with Justin Bieber, Selena Gomez had declared no one she worked with could go by the name Justin. Apparently, quite a few crew members had their name and therefore were given different names during her time of mourning.
Allegedly.
During her last Girl on Earth world tour in 2010, Rihanna's rider included one large fur rug, preferably animal printed, for her to walk on barefoot. Apparently, she was also very big into curtains, specifically blue or black, with icy blue chiffon and white curtains to cover any lockers or bricks.
Now, here's my thing about anybody asking for certain furniture or looks. Why don't you just travel with it?
Yeah.
You have these big tour buses. Now, mind you, girl.
And travel with your things.
Like, honestly, my writer is, take everything out of this fucking room because I'm bringing my own shit.
Yeah.
Like, that would be my writer. And I'm not mad at anybody. You know, if you can ask for it and you receive it, then you get it. And that's the way our industry works. But I wouldn't want new things each time. I would want my own.
Madonna requests to have her dressing room set
up. Did you say Madonna or Madonna?
Madonna.
There it
as
is.
As in...
Vogue
requests to have her dressing room set up exactly like her room at home. She literally has some of her own furniture shipped. She also needs accommodations for her whole 200-person entourage. That is not true. Because her entourage is four black men that are under the age of 30.
Whoa.
A few more insane demands include a brand new toilet seat at every venue. Maybe you confused her with J-Lo.
No, I didn't.
She's smart like J-Lo. Pink and white roses J-Lo. With each stem trimmed exactly 6 inches and 20 international phone lines.
For 20?
Her men. That's crazy. There's no way.
I'm not mad at Madonna or Cher or any of those queens from history coming through. Because it's like, okay, Madonna.
In 20 years, we're all going to look back at Madonna's face now and laugh at it, according to what you're saying with injections.
Madonna is definitely, she's Death Becomes Her. Let's just talk about Madonna for a minute.
She's not Death Becomes Her.
She's totally Death Becomes
Her. She doesn't look amazing. In Death Becomes Her, they get hotter and younger. Like, Madonna looks a little scary.
I'm sorry, maybe you didn't see the last scene of Death Becomes Her. They looked crazy.
Okay, whatever.
Listen, we live in a society of Hollywood and celebrity where you can ask for anything, and at a certain level of celebrity, you can get it.
I think it becomes kind of like sport for some people. Like, some people just want to ask to see if they can get it, and it's just to make it the most bizarre thing. You're pushing the boundary. It's like the kid trying to touch the flame. It's like, can I ask for 20 international phone lines and get them? Well, yeah.
Okay, babes, you just made Warner Brothers $400 million. You just have a number. You have the top four songs internationally. You just went diamond, and you're about to go on a 48,000 city tour.
Okay.
You have...
What am I asking for? Well, first of all, I live in a different universe and I fucking love it. DeLulu is the Salulu.
What's on your rider? Anything in the world is available.
Anything in the world.
Well,
I want the best purple sweet potatoes possible. I want my diet. So like everything that I eat, we have on my rider. Okay. So I have purple sweet potatoes. I want my organic turkey. I want my special apple cider vinegar drink. I want coconut yogurt. I want sunflower seed butter. I want the powdered peanut butter that I love. I want my special water that is reverse osmosis. Okay, great. Then I'm getting 2 times a week a facial treatment.
But babe, you're only there for a night.
It doesn't... But I'm traveling.
Are you doing? No.
But I'm traveling on these.
But the rider gives to each venue, not
so every venue I go to. I have a facialist present.
There you go. That's better.
I also have a masseuse present.
Yes, I would actually agree with that.
Then I have my hair and makeup team with me at all time.
That's not a rider. That's not in your rider.
That's not in my. That's in my contract.
Correct.
Okay. So I have my food. Well, I don't need all my foods. That's wasteful because I wouldn't be there just for an evening.
But you could ask for your foods, and you can ask for a chef or a kitchen in your place to cook those foods so that you know.
I asked for a microwave and an easy bake oven. And I would, you know what? Ambiance would be important
everything.
To me. It needs to smell a certain way.
Yes.
I need a very clean bathroom.
What candle are you asking them for at every single stop?
Diptyque Bays.
Okay.
That would be this neutral. It's clean. Mm-hmm. I like it. And
do you want it burning before you get in the room, or do you want to burn it yourself? Because that's a part of the rider.
I can do it.
Okay.
I can light my.
So you want an unopened, Diptyque
open
base,
it, but don't light it.
Okay, an opened Diptyque base, mm-hmm. but it better not be lit.
It better not be lit.
Cool.
And I want a seagrass rug put down.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. That's.
I also want. Yeah, I'm starting it.
You're getting it.
I also want. No overhead lighting.
Okay, you want all the overhead lights gone.
So I can have the mirror light, which mm-hmm. is like for my makeup, and that needs to be accurate and correct, but mm-hmm. nothing on top.
Possible and doable.
And I want fresh flowers.
I love it. What kind of fresh flowers?
Whatever is seasonal.
You're going to keep it that vague? This is a rider. You got to be detailed.
No lilies.
Okay.
And tulips, roses, peonies... are always welcome, but you can get cool and artistic on me too. Like, surprise me a little bit.
Ooh.
Give me something that
until
is
the fifth time you come to a place and somebody surprises you, ask with some sunflowers, and you'll be like, nah.
Oh, I don't want no sunflowers.
I'm gonna be more detailed.
I don't want sunflowers. I want it to be like chic. It has to be chic. It has to be pretty. It has to be interesting. Give me some like eucalyptus stems.
Okay. You want a goop inspired floral?
Ooh.
You gotta be detailed
goop.
With it.
No, I want more...
Erewhon inspired florals.
Sure.
There it is.
Okay.
You Erewhon. Want Erewhon flowers imported at every stop gracing your table. That's a yes.
Okay. I'm thinking about it. I'm like, I wish I knew a really good florist that I could give you what I see in my head.
That's the thing.
Because, you know, do you remember when we were trying to get flowers for Whoopi and we found that website and there were those super abstract, trees and, like, the mm-hmm. dripping, like, cherry blossomy things? Like, that's actually more of what I want.
Then that is the writer. It's like, at every stop, I need you to contact this florist and send in this. And
like
this
Elton
is the budget.
John. Exactly. Like Elton John does, where he wants like all of his special flowers, flowers in every room. I am. See, this is, it just is this slippery slope.
It's very dangerous.
It's
and when
so
you realize
dangerous.
That in a writer, you can be that specific, your brain just goes.
You just made Universal $720 million opening weekend.
Ooh, opening weekend.
Everything that you have recorded... all of a sudden has gone platinum.
Okay. I got 4 albums.
Yeah. They all just went platinum.
Shit.
Including That's What Little Girls Are Made Of.
Wow.
Platinum. You also just signed a contract with NBC.
Ooh.
Okay, so you're still in the Universal family. You just signed a contract with NBC for a new hit series that they picked up for 6 seasons.
A 6-season pickup?
They sold it in the, you sold it in the room.
6 seasons?
And they bought 6 fucking seasons.
No pilot, straight to series.
Exactly, for 6 seasons. It's unheard of.
Yo, I'm amazing. Let me tell you
what's the fuck's on a writer.
Well, lunchtime is in and out. And it must be imported because if I'm in Pakistan or if I'm
in your new home,
France, I want an In-N-Out triple double. I'm sorry, a 3x3. My beverage will have to be the osmosis water. So I want an osmosis machine and pebble ice machine.
Oh, shit. I do too.
My turn.
I know. But that's really good.
I'm traveling with my wife, so you get all the perks.
Okay, thank you.
Ice machine, osmosis machine. It's very, very important that I have a new box of Q-tips every single, like, in every placement in all the bathrooms. When it comes to my makeup and, you know, dancers, I want new Q-tips everywhere. I would like Brooks Brothers towels in my shower and my Act body wash.
Yes.
In every single shower. I would require... I'm kind of like torn between someone following me around taking pictures, like needing someone.
Oh, like to document like Kanye does?
Yeah, like to document at each place. Every microphone that I touch must be disinfected.
Yes.
Every single time.
We would just have personal disinfectors.
Yes, that's in my writer, without a doubt. Yeah. And I need a new pair of Gucci flip-flops.
Everywhere you go.
Everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Period.
I was thinking about the clothing element, too. I was like, I think I'd want a new shirt or something.
I want a new robe.
I want like a new... pair of jeans, Gap jeans.
Every single place you go because
the
obviously...
The 90s low-rise size 25 hemmed everywhere I go. I want them.
And then I would like a new dog bowl and specialty jerky for my dog at every place and a beautiful person to walk Quinn every single place.
My dad would be like... He would be so mad at us. He'd be like, have I taught you nothing? He would be so pissed. Okay, one more.
Okay.
At the top of Joe Jonas's rider, 12 puppies. He revealed that it's been on his rider for a while, but this is the only thing he doesn't always get. He said only occasionally will the city show up with 12 puppies for him. Next time we understand or next time we know where Joe Jonas is...
We should just bring him some puppies.
Bring him 12 fucking puppies.
Well, Joe Jonas, come on our podcast. We'll just fill the table with puppies.
Oh, that's a good one. Joe, come on. We'll bring you all the puppies. Babes, let's toast to the writer.
Let's toast to the writer.
After seeing a need for it in his community, a dad and his sons from Pittsburgh started a food pantry in their front yard. It was an immediate success. The local news reported on it, and the community came together even more in support, with people from all around town stopping by to donate to the pantry. One person even left an envelope full of $100 bills with a message, "May God bless and prosper your food pantry."
Okay, first of all,
dad and sons.
Well, is who we're toasting to. Well done. I love a food pantry. We have contributed to multiple food pantries around our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. A mosque has a food pantry by our old house. A church, a lot of people do it. And to get your children involved in such a selfless act and to give back to the community is wonderful. I think that's a wonderful toast in comparison to what we were talking about, just the excess that we consume when it comes to food or, you know, thank goodness for the goodwill drive and things of that nature. We just collect so much shit. Yeah. Let's share it.
You know, during my elementary school years, every Friday, I would volunteer at the soup kitchen because my elementary school was connected to a church and the church had a soup kitchen. And I loved it. I actually really looked forward to it every week. And I would cook and then hand out meals and we would all be in a line. And, you know, I'd be like the mashed potato person or whatever. But I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed actually talking to everyone who came by. But it also made me have an
empathy
awareness
for humans.
Yeah, and a perspective of gratitude for, you know, the fact that I had food, but then also just the ability to connect with other people and help them.
And that's what AI can never do. No matter how many jobs they take, they will never be able to take away human connection and helping each other.
And that's why I don't like AI therapy.
Thank you so much for watching Tea Time with Raven and Miranda. And I also want to say and shout out to those who listen to the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
You should just know that we appreciate your ear holes. And we do. And that if you ever want us to bombard your eye holes, we're also on YouTube. For everybody who's watching on YouTube, don't forget to subscribe, like, and go down in those comments. Write what you don't like about AI and write what you want in your writer. And if you're down for a concert from me and Miranda so that we can actually get a writer out there, we'll put some shit together.
And if you are listening with your ear holes, you would really want a writer because Raven has Q-tips in every single one of her rooms.
They're so delicious. And I know I'm not supposed to put them down my ear, but whatever. Anyway, thank you so much.
She puts them down her ear all the way. She just like literally just like all the way down.
Every Thursday. Thank you so much for listening. We love you guys. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.